The House Committee on Healthcare Subcommittee on Healthcare Access to Order and open a public hearing on HB 2835. Could you tell us what that's about?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. House Bill 2835 comes to us from Representative Schaffler. This bill is proposing to exempt association health plans from the current requirements for our small employer group insurance program that is housed in Department of Consumer and Business Services. At this time, I don't believe it has a revenue impact, and I don't have a fiscal impact statement on this bill at this time.
Thank you. Do we have a representative here to talk about it today?
We have several folks that have signed up.
Not Representative Schaffler.
No, Representative Schaffler deferred.
Okay, great. Well, let's go down the list as people are on it. Can I call Lisa Trussell and Jessica Adams? I'm sorry, Adamson, is that? And Norman Russell for the first panel. You got all squeezed into the same line there. I had my eyes dilated this morning, and I still haven't gotten fully through the fog.
Chair, are you going to see one or two candles on that birthday cake then?
You put that many candles on, it'll burn the house down. Go for it. Whatever order you guys want.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. Thank you for hearing this important bill, which is a priority for our organization this session, dealing with the important issue of health care and the opportunities for small employers to get access to health care through association health plans. AGC is an organization of 1,100 commercial contractors in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Our firms build roads, bridges, schools, anything that really isn't single-family residential. And our association, among the many things that it does, including being here, negotiating labor contracts, we also provide group products. One of those products is a health plan. And we work together with HealthNet and Kaiser Permanente to offer a variety of health products to our members that are bundled in a way that enables small employers to get access to products and claims administration and a variety of services in a way that they could not get on their own in the private market. That's the benefit of pooling. That's the benefit of an association plan, is that we can use our buying power to go out into the market and negotiate on behalf of those employers to try and get a product that's good for them, that's good for their employees, that's cost-effective. It simply provides another choice for small employers, those under 25, who would otherwise not be able to go out and really negotiate in the marketplace. If they're under 25, their market is the small employer health insurance market. As we understand it, those are rate and benefit-regulated plans. I'll let my colleague, Lisa Trussell, talk more about what that market looks like. But from AGC's perspective, we're able to offer a really innovative product that over the last few years has been at about 10,000 lives. We haven't seen tremendous growth. What we have seen is above 92% retention in the program. So it's remained relatively stable. It's provided a tremendous benefit for employers who otherwise may not be able to provide health insurance, certainly wouldn't be able to provide it at the level that we can help them provide it at. And again, in a market that's very tight, it provides another option. Here with me today is Norman Russell, who is one of my members and is also on the AGC Health Benefit Trust, to talk about what our plan means to him as a contractor and also some more information about why the product works the way it does.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to present this testimony in support of House Bill 2835. on behalf of not only my company but the fellow members of the Associated General Contractors. As Jessica pointed out, my name is Norman Russell. I'm the president of Russell Construction. We're a commercial industrial contractor based in Tualatin, Oregon. Been in business since 1988. We currently have 45 employees. We provide insurance to all the employees that don't otherwise opt out. As an ADC member, we have the option to purchase the health insurance through the trust. Because of the competitive rates and the innovative options, we're able to offer health insurance to all full-time employees after 90 days of employment. The company pays 100% of the employee cost. We probably would not be able to offer a similar program if this product was not available. Certainly not as with as wide of coverage, which includes dental, vision, life insurance, and a life balance card. It simply wouldn't be affordable. Russell Construction has enough employees that we could go out in the open market and negotiate with carriers for a different product. The ADC option works well for my company, first because of price and options, but secondly, ADC does the negotiating, freeing me up to run my company. Other members of ADC are much smaller, and their only other option would be to purchase a product regulated by the small employer health insurance market regulations. Those products do not offer the kind of combined services and claims administration that association plans like the ADCs offer. The employee market is tight, and employers need tools to recruit and retain employees. Without House Bill 2835, associations may scale back the options they offer to their employees. As a member of ADC Health Benefit Trust, I'm very concerned about the impact the Oregon Insurance Division bulletin on the AGC plan. The bulletin would limit the ability of our group to design an alternative product to what is available on the open market, making associations subject to small employer health insurance rating criteria, which is the object of OID's bulletin, is a policy that will lead to even fewer choices for employers in the health insurance market. House Bill 2835 will clarify the law and allow associations to continue to provide the service they have been providing for years prior to the OID's latest bulletin. In today's tight insurance market, we cannot afford to place more barriers in the way of employers gaining access to health insurance for their employees. Associations have been able to work with insurers using pooling techniques to provide innovative and cost-effective products. Please support employer options and House Bill 2835. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and we're also here today in support of House Bill 2835. And there's just a couple of background pieces I wanted to bring up before the committee, before I get going into the testimony. But first of all, I think that when you hear the term association health plan, you may come up with a negative connotation based on some of the national discussions around association health plans nationally. Nationally, there was legislation discussed that would allow a national association to come in and, quote, cherry pick, as it's been used, as the term used in the insurance division's report, business from Oregon, from the Oregon market. And the national plans would not have been subject to the state of Oregon's long list of mandates, nor would they have been subject to the patient protection legislation that Oregon has. And it's important for you to know that association plans in Oregon are subject to both. We have to provide all the mandates that you pass, and we have to afford the patient protection mechanisms that are also in statute. So just wanted you to understand that we do have to play by the rules. Secondly, this issue came about because of a bulletin that was issued here in the interim by the insurance division. For quite some time, they talked about issuing a rule on 2 to 25 employee market. And ended up, ultimately, they decided to issue a bulletin, and the bulletin went up to 2 to 50, which includes the HIPAA, which is a small group market under federal definitions. One of the things that, and I concur with the comments that have been made ahead of us, but I think it's important for you to know, at least with the AOI program, that we use agents to sell our product for us. I gave you a packet with some of the different offerings that are available.
And what the agent does is the agent works for the employer. They go out and shop the market, and they actually do a spreadsheet with different carriers and different rates and then kind of a benefit analysis of what's the difference between the plans. And they take that to the employer, and then they talk about which is the best for the employer. So although we appear on the spreadsheet, we may or may not always be picked by the employer. But it's an important option for the employer to have. And there'd be various reasons. If you're going to buy my product, for example, that AOI offers, you have to join AOI. And businesses may or may not want to do that. But it's just one other option for small employers to look at. The other thing is that I think it's important to note is that on the direction of this change by the insurance division in direction as it relates to the CHI market, which is a small employer health insurance market, and the association plans is evident. I've attached a couple of different records that we had in our file based on back when we started AOI Health Choice, which one is the market conduct standards that the insurance division used, and you'll note at the bottom of that was dated March 11th, 2003, where it clearly says that subgroups as a whole may be underwritten using group subgroup aggregate claim information. Back when the insurance division first discussed implementing a rule change, their concern was that associations were using health status information. And I think that the associations that have worked on this piece of legislation, as well as the carriers that were involved, agreed it was inappropriate to use health status information. But then the insurance division went a step further, and they decided that aggregate claims experience was somehow health status information. We disagree with that. There, you'll also note that in the other attachments besides the market conduct survey, there's a couple of letters where I've highlighted. One was from 1994, where it says health insurance offered by a large association such as AOI with more than 25 members would not be subject to the small insurance reforms, which are the CHI rating. And then there's another correspondence in there from 1992 with the Department of Justice specifically talking about NIWAS. But that was in
NIWAS,
multiple employer welfare arrangements, which also were covered by the bulletin that was issued, but that's also to clarify that those are also exempt from Oregon small employer health insurance rating standards. We think that without Senate Bill 2835, you destabilize the association market, and that will have negative impact for small employers who are purchasing insurance. There's a number of lots of criteria that are used in rating. When I conclude my testimony, I'll be submitting some written testimony from an actuary named Kevin McCartan, who talks about some of the different rating factors commonly used in associations and that he thinks would be impacted if the bulletin is left unaddressed. And we think that the current market offers a better alternative than what will happen if that bulletin goes into effect. Now, the bulletin is set to go into effect for groups that renew on or after July 1 of this year. So it's a critical issue for our members, particularly those that rely on us as an option for them to purchase insurance. And we would ask that you would give positive consideration to House Bill 2835.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you for your testimony. You have referred several times to the fact that if we don't address this bulletin, it will have the effect of destabilizing the association market. It's unclear to me what that means. I gather that it will raise the cost of providing your plan, therefore making it less competitive via other options. Am I correct in that? Just talk more about the destabilizing. It's pretty vague.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Cannon, from our perspective, what it does is it's going to put Oregon is one of the most restrictive states, I understand, when it comes to underwriting for the small employer market. And I think that I saw where we are amongst the 10 most restrictive states on how we can rate insurance products for small employers. And so with an association plan...
Excuse me, what does that mean, restricted?
That there's... you can only use... The only thing that you can look at in Oregon is for the small employer market, and I see that the commissioner's in here, so I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it's geographical location, employee status, whether it's employee only or employee plus dependents and that, and age. I think those are the only factors that you can use. Some states you can actually do health status, and we're not proposing to do that here in Oregon. The other things that people use within an association or in a large group market are the contribution, how much of the contribution for the premium is made by the employer, how much is made by the participant, gender. Claims experience is used as a factor, not the factor. It is one of the factors that can be used. And also in the large group market, they typically look at duration of coverage. So if we have to follow the CHI rules, then I think it could maybe argued that there will be some who will pay less, but we think you'll have more who are paying more, because part of what you try to do is encourage wellness and different behaviors. But if I'm not going to be, quote, punished for not partaking in wellness programs, and someone else is going to subsidize my rate, then there's not a whole lot of incentive for someone who to change their behavior and patterns. So the destabilizing is in the rates and what we think it will do to the rate fluctuation.
Can I just clarify and check my own understanding on this, Mr. Chair?
I've been trying to get these skiers to stop skiing because it's really dangerous. It's really been hard to get them to stop. So if this reduces both handball and skiing, it would really be a useful thing. It would be socially useful. I'm sorry.
I had a different line of questioning, but
yeah,
that's...
That's
interesting. If I understood you correctly, then currently the association is able to use a variety of factors, a wider variety of factors, including employee's claims experience or company's claims experience, their gender balance, the degree to which their employees contribute to healthcare costs. Following CHI standards would restrict the use of those factors and narrow it just to age, number of dependents, geography, if those were in fact of what's possible under. So currently,
okay. Yes.
All right, thank you.
Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just curious about how many employers and how many employees would be impacted by this bill in your two different organizations.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Yes, or if you want to get back to us, I'm happy with that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pump, I can tell you I don't have the number of employers right off the top of my head, but I do know that we have 10,000 lives in our program. So that's quite a few employers and certainly a lot of lives in our industry that are tied into our program.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Comp, with ours, I'll have to get back to you on it, but I think that we have somewhere between 160 and 170 groups, but I don't know
how many
bodies.
Okay.
And the other thing is that it's not just AOI and AGC. There are many associations that offer similar product to their membership.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I want is more uninsured Oregonians.
We would concur with that.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. We don't have the so-called bulletin in front of us. I expect we'll hear about what I'm going to ask. Mr. Royal will join us soon. But could you tell me precisely what House Bill 2835 does? And the changes on page 4 and 5, I think. Not being so certain of my eyesight today. I'm not sure that's the case, but it looks to me like the changes are on page 4, line 22 to 30, and line 5. 15 on. What's the effect of this bill specifically?
Well, it's our belief that the effect of the bill specifically is that to clarify that the CHI rules apply only to policies that are issued directly to the employer. With an association plan, the policies, the contracts are held by the association, and then basically certificates are, of coverage are then, you know, with the benefit summaries, and that are what the employer gets. But we're the ones that negotiate the benefits, so we hold the contract. What this is doing is saying that the CHI, we went through the CHI statutes.
About CHI.
Well, small employer health benefit. That's the CHI market. That those are issued by the carrier directly to an employer. So those are all the people who are buying these products here, which are on the CBS's website, which is the CHI small group market product. And so that's what the intent of the bill is to go
well,
through
I'm
and clarify
about
that.
The intent. I assume you asked for this bill, right?
Yes.
I want to know what those words do, not what the intent is. You have somebody...
Well, the words came from LC, but they were asked to add in a definition for a small employer health benefit plan to apply to those carriers who provide the benefit directly to the employer.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may add, not to and to specifically exclude plans that do not or that simply include small employers that just aren't direct riders.
Or who purchase directly from an association.
Yeah.
Well, let me continue. Is the effect of this, are you suggesting that the commissioner has authority to do something under small employer health benefit packages, but not under something else? And what you're doing with this is taking association plans out of the definition of small employer health benefits?
Mr. Chair, we believe what we're doing is clarifying what we've always believed and how we've always operated to be the case, which is that the insurance commissioner does indeed have authority over the small employer health insurance benefit market, that he does regulate that market. But the regulation of the association health plan market stops with the approval of the association as a bona fide association, not just a group that comes together to offer insurance products. And that from there on we are treated as though we are a large group and we interact in the market in that way.
Is that somewhere in statute, what you just said?
That is what we've always believed the statute to say and how we've always operated in the market. There is a question on that, and that's where we spent a great deal of time this interim trying to sort out that question with a great deal of disagreement on both sides about whether or not he had regulatory authority that extended beyond that. That's why we're here, is to try and resolve that policy question.
And, Mr. Chair, I believe it is in statute, and I don't have it in front of me, where it does talk about what a bona fide association is.
And you're saying that when you go to page 5, line 27 through 32, that's restricting those descriptions to small employers.
Plans sold to small employers.
And you're opting out of small employers by what's happening on the prior page. We might need to get LC here if we get serious about this, but anyway.
We would be happy to get some clarification on that, but I believe what we're trying to do is clarify that when you sell a plan to a small employer, that's directly to that employer as opposed to just because we offer a plan to a small employer, the regulation doesn't extend to us just because we include small employers in our plan.
And
when you sell a plan, what you're trying to do with this is when you sell a plan to a small employer, you want to be exempt from regulations about small employers. But when somebody else sells a plan to a small employer, it's okay for them to be included in the regulations about selling plans to small employers.
These would apply to plans that are sold directly by the carrier through an agent, perhaps, directly to a small employer. And yes, you're correct. It would not, and what we're hoping is that these rules do not apply to small employers who might choose to purchase the insurance through an association plan.
Because you don't use an agent to sell it directly to the small employer?
Well, actually, we do.
Okay.
The difference is that we're offering a product that is different than what the prescribed benefit is under the, quote, CHI product. There is a product that the carriers who are going to sell in Oregon have to offer to small employers, and it's pretty defined benefit I can get you copies. It's off of the website, insurance division. But it's called the CHI Basic Plan, and the rating, they post the rates quarterly of how much that product is selling for throughout the different seven geographical areas. And the point I think it's important to note is that we're not selling this product. We're selling a product that they can't get on their own. And we go in, and when the carrier comes in and tells us what the rate increase is going to be, we arm wrestle with them over what the rate will be. So we are not offering the CI product. We're offering something they couldn't get otherwise on their own. And we want to continue with the flexibility of the rating criteria as long as been established in Oregon. We don't see any evidence that we're having an adverse impact on the CHI market because of what we're doing.
Under this statute, even without the definition, you could still sell different products, right, to small, just so you follow the rating rules that apply?
You could do that, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure what the how we could be a benefit to the small employer if they have to play by the same rules within a large group of associations as they would have to play by if they were just making the call and saying, I got 9 employees, you know. I'm not sure that we can give them any rate leverage.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to leave testimony from Nina Stratton, who's an agent in support, and also Kevin McCartan is an actuary, and he's got some more detailed information. And the other thing is that we were unable to get our technical people in here. We were pleased to see the bill scheduled, but we weren't able. So if you hold another one, we can get some of the techies in to go over why the bill we had it drafted the way we did.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to call Joel Ariel next, please. Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Afternoon. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Ariel. I'm actually the administrator, not the commissioner of insurance, within the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Sorry if I promoted you.
That's fine. Easy. That's just fine. I'll be happy to take up skiing after the hearing, too, with you. This is not going to be the same kind of hearing we had on Friday where everybody was more or less in support of the same issue on insurance transparency. This is a controversial issue, and I will do my very best to keep this at a sort of broad conceptual level, but some of these concepts are important parts of the regulatory system, so I have to explain some of the kind of detail of insurance regulation here as well. Let me start by explaining how the small group market works, and then I'll talk about how this bill would undermine that market for the 200,000 people who are part of it today, and then I'll talk about what we've done on this issue. We're trying to work with the parties on this issue, and then finally, how our solution in the bulletin does not hurt associations. It allows them to in fact, have a lot of leverage in the marketplace. How do the small group laws work? The problem that the legislature faced in the 1990s was that small groups, particularly groups of 2 to 10, but really any group under 25 at that time, was in some peril in the marketplace because if one or two people in the group got sick during a particular year, had a large amount of claims during a particular year, then the rate for that group could skyrocket. You can imagine a group of 2, one person having a major medical claim, if you're rating it as this bill would propose on claims experience, the cost of the policy could triple or quadruple or even much more than that in a single year based on one person having a health problem. What the legislature did back then is looked at how large group insurance works and why it's an effective way of pooling and spreading risk. In a large group, if one or two people get sick in a given year, doesn't affect the overall rate. Because that cost is eaten up by the much larger number of people who stay healthy during the year. And, in fact, if you get to groups of 250 or more, rates are, as the chair knows, rates are pretty predictable year to year. You don't know which people in the group are going to get sick, but you can predict claims experience for large groups pretty close to on the money because of the law of large numbers and so forth. So the purpose of the small group laws that we passed in the 1990s were to pool risk in the small groups so that small groups would have the same kind of large group advantages as natural large groups. And so what the laws simply say is that if you're in a group of 2 to 25, that's the market that's rate regulated in Oregon, you can't be rated on your own individual group's experience, claims experience. You will be rated along with the rest of the small groups in that insurer's portfolio of small groups. So that essentially means that all small groups are now, depending on the insurer, depending on how big a pool they have in the small group market, are part of much larger pools, in every case well over 250 lives, well over 1,000 lives in most cases. And so when there are rate experiences, as there inevitably are for everybody, they come through in a pooled way and are shared and spread. Now, of course, there are some winners and some losers every year on that. One of the reasons why this has worked well in healthcare, and this is different than how most lines of insurance work, by the way, is because health is one of those things where everybody is going to, almost everybody starts out on the healthy side and through their life migrates towards the unhealthy side. So most people, the alternative to not being on the unhealthy side of the health spectrum is less preferable than being having some health problems. So over time, everybody kind of makes out okay over in this risk-spreading way. And that's really what the small group laws are designed to do. Now, how would this bill affect that? This bill, and I should say this is an important point, there was a lot of discussion there about the leverage that associations bring to the market with by pooling a large number of lives together. We totally agree with that, and we think it's a good thing in the market for an association or any group of people to pool risk and bring a large group to the marketplace because that does give you leverage. But what you have leverage is because you come as a large group, and as long as that leverage is shared equally with the group, and that's how large group insurance works, it's shared equally with the group, it's a good thing. The problem comes in what they want to do in the bill, which is kind of the page 14 stuff. If you look at the bill itself, you ask what language is there in the bill. It's the page 14 stuff which says not only can the large group be rated as an aggregate on its experience, that's perfectly acceptable. That is how large group insurance works, and it's how association insurance should work. They want to change the large group law and say for the association, we can turn around and split up the association into a bunch of small groups and then rate them separately. So the group over here of 2 that has bad claims experience, their rates go way up. The group over here that has good experience, their rates go down. That is a recipe for volatility in that market. It can work in the current market, and this is where it gets complicated from an insurance perspective. Somebody would say, well, that, you know, why would an association do that? Because the people who are getting the rate increases are going to scream and the association's going to be in trouble. Well, no, because if they have the small group market laws that we have over here, then what can happen over time is the small groups that get good rates stay with the association. The small groups that get rate increases have an alternative. They drop the association plan, go to the small employer plan. And so over time, this is cherry picking. That's what we mean by cherry picking off the small group market.
Excuse me, we have a question.
Go ahead.
Richardson? I thought that this was a process or a practice that's been in place for a long time, and that there was recent indication from a letter that your office sent out that it might change, and that this legislation was to see that it didn't change. Is that not the case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, no, that's not the case. I'll go to the third question here and give you the context here. In early 2006, insurance agents came to us and said, there is this kind of cherry-picking starting to go on in the association marketplace, and if you, as the insurance regulator, don't do something about it, it is going to undermine the small group pool. So we started discussions in our advisory committee on the issue, and we never have gotten clarity on exactly what is going on in the marketplace, because that's been part of our question. Is we don't think this is going on in any broad way. Have there been pockets of certain uses of claims experience, certain uses of rating? Possibly. We just haven't seen the experience. And in defense of the parties that won't bring us the experience to demonstrate it, they say, well, even though we've said we're not after enforcement here, we simply want to know what went on in the marketplace, they're still nervous that if they tell us what they're actually doing today, that we might somehow take action. We said we wouldn't, and if this committee can be a forum in which we can put on the table exactly what people are doing, we would like to see it. But my knowledge of this is that the insurance agent community came to us, a couple agents, and said, this is starting to take place in a significant way, and you need to address it. And when we looked into it, Lisa is correct. They found down in the deep pockets of the sort of technical regulations that we have for our market examiners, that there was some place in those regulations that said this kind of practice of rating subgroups would be okay. Now, my people say we never saw it, and we didn't regulate in that fashion, but that was in our material at some point in the past. And so, again, I can't tell you exactly how much of this has happened, but our knowledge of the marketplace is that this has been not a practice in the market, and if we could get to the bottom of exactly what market practices have been, I think there might be, then we could have a better discussion. So what we did is simply, in our bulletin, thought we were stating current law.
Okay, quick follow-up. So what is taking place now that you think may be taking place wasn't taking place 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago? There's been some change in the law that would have prevented it before, that now is allowing these concerns that you have to the surface. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, yes. By the time we issued the bulletin, we'd had 6 months of discussion, and the insurers who actually provide the products were more or less comfortable. Some of them said, you need to do this, absolutely. Others said, we're not sure you need to do it, but whatever you're going to do, just do it and be consistent with everybody on it. So we issued the bulletin, and none of the insurers complained, but a bunch of the associations who are insured came forward at that point and said, you know, we haven't brought everything forward yet, but this will definitely dramatically affect us. And when they said that to us, we said, that's new news to us, but we will grant an extension on this issue. And there are two purposes to that. One is not to cause an immediate disruption in the marketplace. Two was to try to get the evidence, and we've got several investigations going. We are still having quite a bit of difficulty, I have to tell you, getting even the most basic information from some of the associations over how they actually operate today. And if this committee could get that on the record, it would be helpful to us to sort out where the issues are. The other purpose, frankly, was that they wanted to have an opportunity to talk to the legislature about the issue and see if they could get the law changed. And we thought that's a fair process. The legislature should consider this issue. And I'm here today to tell you why I think the bulletin's right. And we hope you don't change the law. But obviously, if you want to change the law, that's something that we would say yes, sir, to.
Okay.
I never got the answer. at least it came, it wasn't clear to me.
No.
I'm looking, we're amending ORS 743.730, and I have that in front of me, and it says that this was created in 1991, you know, some changes like that. And so this, my understanding of what this bill is to do is to kind of stop you from doing something that they're concerned that you're going to do. You've explained what that is. And what I'm asking is, why now? What change has occurred in the way that the administrations have been doing their work since 1991 that causes this to be an immediate need for your agency to get involved now that wasn't there 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, again, we believe the law prohibits what they're advocating
doing for 20 years.
And no, we don't believe it has been happening in the market because we believe it violates the law. But in the details of exactly what the laws mean in particular situations, there has been some skirmishing, and I just don't know that whole history. We again have asked, show us what you have been doing, and we'll take a look at it. And we haven't seen the evidence for exactly what's doing. I tend to rely on the agents who brought forward to me as an issue of the market is changing, there's more of this behavior.
As the letter that he sent out.
Yeah, but he would assert that he always had the authority to regulate. I mean, I'm assuming he always had the authority to regulate it, and now he's regulating. They said, wait, stop. We want to take away your authority.
Mr. Chair, again, many people have told us that what we're interpreting in the bulletin is exactly what they thought the law meant and what they've been doing all along and encouraging us to do this because the few people who are quote-unquote outliers to that position need to be brought into conformity. So exactly how many people are outside the bulletin today, I can't tell you because we have asked for the information. We don't have it. If this committee can ferret it out, but we don't believe it's a relatively small number because were it not, the rationales that I'm explaining would cause problems in the marketplace.
So apparently they have been providing these association plans for a period of time. There now is concern that they may be violating a rule.
Inside the
and
reading
so
process.
What this bill is designed to do is to essentially implement in legislation in the statutes what they've been doing before.
No, it's to take away their authority to regulate that.
But the reason that it's starting to be regulated is it wasn't. I mean, they're still doing what they were doing before, but this is to start regulating it.
We need to ask him, but what I'm hearing them say is they thought everybody was following the law as they saw it. They now got a feeling that they weren't following the law, so they issued a bulletin and say, hey, everybody get in line. The response is this bill to take away his authority to do exactly that.
Chair Greenwood.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
My problem with all this is a couple of statements that were made that a couple of agents brought this concern to him. We don't know how many is a couple. We don't know how big the concern is. Now I've heard that there's been a group working on this for over 6 months and there's absolute conflict in the group of a resolution. So therefore, now we have a bill to take care of something that we don't even know whether it's a problem or not.
You want to comment on that?
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Comp, we have made a similar point repeatedly, which is if there are things that people are doing in the marketplace that conflict with this bulletin, please bring them to us, and we will look at them, and maybe we can figure out whether they do or don't fit within the law. And we haven't, we've had none of those discussions. Actually, with some of the insurers, we have had those discussions. Several of the major insurers have brought in particular issues and said, is this what you mean by the bulletin and so forth, and we've talked it through. But we don't know about other activity. What we hear is people saying, we've been doing a lot of things that violate your bulletin. We say, well, bring them forward so we can discuss them and look at them. We're not going to talk about enforcement here. We're simply trying to understand the situation, and we haven't seen those examples.
Right. Follow up?
Please.
So what you're telling us today as a committee here is that this is your best example and explanation without even having a copy of the, what's it called, the bulletin, so we could even read that here today so we can get a better understanding. But, I mean, as we continue, and I was going to do what Representative Richardson just did, was go and look at the current statutes to kind of muddle through this. But It's not getting any clearer to me.
Just remember who's asking for the bill. And I think that's the first thing. This isn't them.
Well, I understand who's asking. I clearly understand who's asking for the bill, but on the flip side of that is I don't know if they've been... There's innuendos about they and who and what is doing what. And maybe I'm just still too new to this process, but why don't we put the facts on
this
the table?
This is probably going beyond a public hearing.
Yeah.
And discussion. But I think it's a very interesting discussion. But the thrust of the bill is to take away their authority. If the proponents didn't believe they had the authority to do what they're doing,
there wouldn't be a bill.
Then there wouldn't be a bill.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, maybe the piece that I sort of left off when we got into the question of the history here was here. I don't think it's a lot more complicated than this in its fundamental issue. The question is, you have an association; it's a large group of people. If that large group is rated like large groups typically are, as one large group, that is perfectly acceptable under the insurance code. But it is, the analogy would be, if in the large group the employer says, I want to identify the 10% that cost me the most and charge them this rate based on their aggregate claims experience, and the other 10% that cost the least and pay, charge them the least and split up the others in the middle, that is the practice that we believe violates the small group laws, to the extent that the groups that they're doing that to are otherwise small groups subject to the small group law. So they can do this with larger groups, but if the groups are 2 to 25 in size within that large group, and they're applying a rating methodology to them that is different than how the small group laws work, then what's going to happen is the ones that get favorable treatment in the association under that scheme stay in the association. The ones that get unfavorable treatment drop back into the small group pool. And at the national level, there was a thorough study of this part, the rating part. And Lisa's correct, there's a lot of other things wrong with those national bills, but the cherry picking is exactly the same, which is if the rating is allowed that way, the GAO estimated that 20% of businesses over the long haul benefit from that. Those are the ones that consistently have healthy workers, and 80% lose over time. That's how they estimated it works, and that would be I think that's a pretty good estimate, that most of the time the groups that are the bet that you're going to consistently have that good experience and stay on the good side of this is unlikely. There are many fewer of those than the ones that need the rate relief in a year when they have a sick person. So that's what's fundamentally at stake for us. Now, are there, the way the bill is written, this is another problem with the discussion. It's always been, we've said, well, claims experience, it's possible if you're using claims experience as a very limited factor in rating. Say it's a 2% deduction if you have good claims experience in a year. That probably doesn't affect the market very much, and that might be very acceptable. The way the bill is written, though, it says that you can use claims experience entirely as the rating factor, so that a group of two could be entirely rated on its claims experience. Now, when we say that's what the bill says, they say, well, that's not what we intend to do. Well, then let's talk about what you intend to do and show us the experience, and we'll talk to you about whether there are some reasonable ways to use rating. I don't suspect anybody is actually rating a group of two on their claims experience fully. But I don't know where it is in the middle, and this bill says they can do all of that. And so that's what we object to.
Chair Greenlee.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for allowing me to ask my questions, because now it has helped me process, and I reread page 14, and with the explanation, I think I'm getting it. Well, I mean, seriously, it did help.
I'm not sure I'm getting it yet. So
I'm getting there.
Joel, you have more to go.
The last couple points I wanted to make, Mr. Chair, are, one, that this, I don't believe this hurts associations at all. A, they can use their leverage. Their leverage is as a large group. So they get, as Lisa says, they arm wrestle with the carriers. That's one of the problems. The carriers don't always deal with the associations because they are effective leverage points. And so they, like large groups, they do better in the market than these small groups. The small groups are vulnerable. That's why we have the laws. So they get all of that leverage, and the only thing they can't do is split it up among their people and based on health experience. The second thing is, there was this talk about, well, we don't offer the CHI plan, and as the chair indicated, there's nothing in the small group laws that limits what kind of benefits are offered. They can have any kind of benefit plan that they can convince a carrier to offer, in the small group market. So we're not affecting at all what kind of plans are offered. What we're affecting is how they're priced. And then the third point is they can, again, use any incentives they want to attract people into the association. They, upon occasion, I don't know if I heard it today, say, well, if we don't have these kind of, if we can't offer people incentive for good claims experience, no one will join our association. Well, there are many other types of incentives people have to join these associations. The only one we don't want them to use is to say, you're in the small group market now where you're pooled with everybody, and if you're better than average in that pool, we've got a deal for you to pull you out of that pool. That's the one thing we don't want the association to be able to do, is use the incentive of you got better than average experience, come out of the pool. And again, I'm not alleging that they sit there and try to do that day by day, but if you think about this in insurance principles, if employers are seeking the lowest rate and they're rational about it, they're going to be smart enough to figure this out over time. That's how the market will work. If it doesn't, if I'm a small employer and I can get a better rate in the association, and then know next year if I have bad experience, I can go back to the association, I'd be derelict in my duty if I didn't take advantage of it. That's what I should do if it's offered to me, but it will undermine the pool.
Okay. Any other questions? Just for warning, we need to be out at 4:45. Is that right?
At the latest, sir.
Yeah, 4:40 or 4:45 to make way for the next. But
I think we have time.
Mr. Chair, just I'm still trying to understand this. I think that let me ask it this way. Would you be okay with allowing an association to fall under the same sort of category in the law as large groups? Is that your sort of intent? Is that the way you think about an association, even one that offers insurance to various small employers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ken, yes, that's it in the main. The issue, you don't, the law on large groups, certain kinds of splitting up, the full splitting up just on, you know, here we'll take the 10% that are lowest and 10% that are highest, probably not legal, but since large employers generally don't segregate their pools in the same way an association does, I don't know if all of the issues in the large group market are worked out in the ways that might be discriminatory in an association where it's actually not one large employer. So there may be still some pockets, but clearly it is correct. If it's treated as a large group and everybody's subject to a uniform rating set of standards that aren't separated by small group, then that's what we're trying to achieve, yes.
Okay, thank you. And I thought that was the sort of intent of this bill, was to clarify that small group, associations that serve small groups were to be treated as, it doesn't say this, but that it would, that was sort of the effect of the bill. But you've pointed out, I think on page 14, the way in which this would allow that association to do something that a large group or a large employer is not, which is to sort of segment, yeah.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Ken, I think that you're right, the definition on page 4 seems to suggest exactly what you just said, that they could be immune because they're a large employer. We would be fine with that if it wasn't for the other change about the subject.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you very much, but hang around.
Thank you, I will.
Can I have four folks come up? Anybody named Jim or Jeff or John who wants to testify? Will you?
It's a very common name.
But they're all in order.
Jeff's coming up.
Two Jeffs, one Jim, and one John, if we
Jeff
could have.
Jeff and Joe, yeah.
Although I have to say, one Jeff is spelled with a G. That doesn't make any
sense. Yeah, word.
Support.
Hey, Jim, let me introduce myself.
Then, just for the record,
we only have three chairs.
Oh, we only have three chairs. All right, somebody has to stand up. It should be one of the Jeffs, right? Because
yeah.
After this, we'll have Ellen Pinney, and then following that, we'll have a panel of Bill Perry, Garth Rouse, and Mark Hall.
There were seven. I couldn't figure out how to divide three and a half each.
Well, Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Jeff Dean. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Associated Builders and Contractors. I am here today to lend our support to House Bill 2835. And with that said, I brought with me our managing agent who oversees our plan, Mr. John Niedermeyer. And if it pleases the committee, I can simply introduce him, turn over the testimony, and make some room for Jim, who's sitting behind me.
Great. So,
all right.
Mr. Chair, I'm John Niedermeyer. Excuse me.
an insurance producer here in or out of Portland, Oregon. I'm the managing general agent for the Associated Builders and Contractors. We also manage several other association health plans. I do take issue with a couple areas of concern. The bulletin that was issued by the insurance division does not allow for some of the things that I believe was implied in the last testimony, specifically a plus or minus 2% based on experience. There is not room for that, as I understand it. Also, it's also my understanding that several of the insurance carriers do not believe that the insurance division has the authority to do what they're doing. They believe that that's a new authority that's being taken by the insurance division. So this is something that many insurance companies believe is new. One of the associations we represent.
So that's the case. We wouldn't need a bill, right?
I guess so.
I'll add clarification to that.
I think we have somebody who'll add some clarification for that. Okay. The word cherry picking was mentioned a couple times. I'd like to address that. We have an association that we represent that's been around since 1970. I don't believe that that association falls in line with the new bulletin exactly the way it is. The last 2 years we've had 97 and 96% retention, meaning in the groups we've lost, we didn't want to lose. They found better deals doing something else. So I don't think the association's out there. I think the lady from the Associated General Contractors also mentioned that she had a 92% retention, 10,000 insured members. The groups I'm looking at have several thousand insured members as well. So this concern of these other agents and their cherry picking, associations cherry picking, I don't believe there's absolutely any evidence whatsoever of that, especially when you see these associations having such high retention. The other issue that I'd like to address is with a couple of the associations we have, something that we're quite proud of is the fact that we're getting small employers to join association health plans which otherwise had no group health insurance. These were small employers that did not provide health insurance, did not find the CHI, small employer health insurance marketplace, attractive or favorable enough. Because of the rating mechanisms or systems or however you want to call it, the associations provide for, yes, a different rating system, but something that's attractive. I would say a good solid 10% of at least two associations we represent we've had employers that never provided group health insurance, now are providing group health insurance for their employees to address Representative Comp's comment about the not wanting to have any more uninsured. I think associations are an additional option for the small employer in the Oregon marketplace. CHI is a nice benefit for Oregon, but I think we need more options so that we can reduce the number of uninsureds out there. So I think leaving it as it is until we see that there is a problem out there, which, again, the high retention shows that there really isn't a problem. I believe Joel mentioned that he didn't know there was a problem. There are some agents out there that were concerned. I know there's a lot of agents that don't like association health plans because they don't represent association health plans. Associations don't want to have 4,000 agents browbeating their 400 members. I mean, that's, you know, kind of obvious. So many insurance agents out there don't like association health plans because the associations typically will pick, you know, 10 different agencies to represent their association so that, you know, they maintain a certain level of professional courtesy and treat their members in an appropriate way. Those are my basic points I wanted to touch on.
Thank you. No, let's keep going and then we'll...
Okay. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jim Gravett. I represent Pacific Source Health Plans. And before I go into my canned presentation here, I'd like to talk about the issue of the director's authority to regulate insurance. No one disagrees, or do we even propose that the director cannot regulate small employer insurance or larger employer insurance or any insurance for that matter. We accept that fact. The disagreement is in the interpretation of whether a set of laws that are directed towards small employer group health plans applies also to association, which we've all considered somewhat a large employer health plan. And I think there's a little uniqueness with an association plan in regards to a small employer plan or a large employer plan, and my presentation, I hope I make that clear. So it's a matter of interpretation, and the only other avenues besides changing this law that we see to indicate that our interpretation is correct is either going to court over the issue or have the Attorney General look at the issue of whether that set of particular laws actually also applies to associations. So again, we don't dispute the regulatory authority here. We actually dispute whether a certain set of laws apply to associations or not. The insurance division has a different opinion, and that opinion actually has changed over the years, as presented in some materials earlier. Going into my canned speech here, Pacific Source supports House Bill 2835 and the effort to keep small employer groups and associations as distinct entities, and giving all size employers the choice of whether or not they want their trade association to negotiate benefits on their behalf. Associations create a mechanism where different size employers in the same industry can combine to be treated as one large employer group. An association is somewhat unique in that a multi-employer plan must serve a variety of constituent needs. An association plan is different from a single employer plan in that the single employer plan serves only the needs of one employer group. Therefore, an association must retain some flexibility in order to serve all segments of its membership. As part of an association group, small and medium-sized employers gain the ability to have their benefits and pricings negotiated on their behalf. Combined, small and medium-sized groups can be treated as a large employer and reap the benefits normally afforded only to larger employers. Subjecting association group health plans to two sets of rules, one for small employers, one for large employers, would hamper the association's negotiating clout and hamper their ability to provide additional value to their small employer segment of their membership. Additional value items can include other things besides the benefits, such as enhanced disease management, greater benefit planning, reporting packages, and additional administrative services. If additional value items are not important to a small employer, they have the ability to seek small employer coverage packages outside the association. Currently, Pacific Source is the largest small employer group carrier in Oregon, with 36,000 members covered through their small employer group plans. These are groups of 2 to 25 employees. We also insure a small number of association plans totaling 1,200 members and consisting of various size employers. As you've heard alluded to before, opponents of this bill would suggest that in the current environment, associations might cherry pick the more attractive small employer groups to the detriment of the current CHI pool. First, we can't believe that any employer, such as Pacific Source, would attempt to improve the position of one segment of their market to the detriment of another section equally as valuable, or that an association would choose to serve one segment of their membership in a way that would be detrimental to another segment of their membership. The Pacific Source CHI pool, again the largest in Oregon, does not support this conclusion. Our CHI pool incurs medical costs approximately 3% lower than the association groups we cover. This means to us that the risk for association groups is not better than the CHI pool, and that the CHI pool has not been negatively impacted by current practices of association groups in general. In conclusion, Pacific Source Health Plan supports House Bill 2835, as this will preserve the different product lines currently demanded in the marketplace and will increase the choice for all employers in their selection of insurance coverage. The evidence does not show that allowing associations to be rated as their own pool worsens the medical risk of the CHI pool. Instead, the evidence shows that CHI pools remain strong, even though several association plans exist today, which is why we urge legislation to pass House Bill 2835. I also have, if asked, the rating practice of Pacific Source, the association rating practices of Pacific Source, and it would be only Pacific Source. I can't talk for other carriers or other associations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Jeff Horning, and I am the Executive Director of the Agribusiness Council of Oregon. Our association's mission is to promote and educate Oregonians on the value of agriculture in our great state. One of the programs, affinity programs we have for our members in an effort to make their businesses more viable is a health insurance program. We are in support of 2835 because we believe that it will allow our memberships opportunities, whether through CHI or other ways, to find the best insurance product available for themselves. Agriculture, as I think we all know, is facing a lot of challenges over the years as margins continue to dwindle and prices continue to escalate, whether it's through all sorts of different variables. We, as an association, really believe that this bulletin, if it takes effect, will limit the amount of options available to our members, whether they're in our association plan or not. That is not important to us. What is most important is providing the best available, least expensive product for our members, and that is why we believe creating a more open marketplace is extremely important to our membership, and that is why we're in support of House Bill 2835.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
President Cannon.
Well, I think we have the opportunity, we can give the opportunity to the associations to sort of refute this cherry-picking claim by describing the degree to which prior claims experience is a ratings factor and is used by the association as a rating factor and affects the price of the plan. We heard from the administrator, the director or administrator?
Administrator.
The administrator that, you know, a 2% variance, well, that would be one thing. A 20% variance or 50% variance based on a company's, a group's prior claims experience would be another. So do you have data on how you have used subgroup ratings to determine pricing?
Okay. I don't. We utilize the insurance companies, actuaries that manage this, as most people in the industry that are actuaries, which I am not, understand that the small numbers are actuarially not credible. So, in other words, you might have a 10-person group that has a very large claim that might happen this year that could be $100,000, and based on their premium, that'd be a horrible upside down situation. But next year they have no claim because that person either leaves, goes somewhere else, or that person, it was a shock claim. They were in a motorcycle accident and they've recovered and they're fine. So actuarially, I don't think it's a sound practice for the insurance companies. I also, again, lean back to the retention issue. When we present as the agent, we help negotiate on behalf of the association. When we present to the association, we present to the board of directors. And so these are board of directors representing their members. And the number one thing that we get from them is that they want to be able to protect all members. So I have a difficult time believing that association executive directors and their boards, which are not about providing insurance, they're about supporting their association, are out to say, hey, beat it, Charlie. You got to go down the road and go into that sea high pool for a couple of years till that cancer claim's gone, and then come back. I just
may I follow up? Because I have trouble understanding why, if this isn't being used as a major determinant of pricing, then why you're looking to eliminate or preclude the director from the statutory authority that he believes, the administrator from the authority he believes he has, to make sure you're not rating subgroups differently.
Well, I think there's the more flexibility that there is for the association, and I believe there should be more flexibility within the association so that you can have more shared experience rating. I think it's more affordable. It allows the associations to provide coverage that's more affordable to the small employer. And I think eliminating that as an option it would be disappointing. To see small employers dropping group health insurance and just giving their employees a couple $100 and saying, hey, go find individual health insurance. That would be disappointing. I think having more options available to small employers to provide health insurance for their employees is a win-win. I don't see the abuse there, and I think the additional flexibility is there to allow a more affordable marketplace for all employers.
Can I follow up just a little bit further on this issue?
And again, I'm not an actuary, so it's above my head.
I understand. Right? It's above mine, too, but it doesn't stop me from trying to understand it.
And I'm just making assumptions based on my understanding of the industry.
It seems like the affordability claim, which is really important, I mean, that the fact that associations can pool and provide potentially more affordable health insurance is a very important consideration for us here, and it seems like the affordability benefit of the pool may come in two ways, as I understand it. One is that you're pooling and you have greater leverage with the insurance companies, and you're able to negotiate better and cheaper benefits. The second is that you can use for employer groups that have good claims history, you can use that factor to discount their rates further. Mm-hmm. But that presumes that you're raising rates, or that rates are higher for those employers that have a worse claims history. And that's where, as I understand it, the concern comes in about cherry picking, is that your package will look less attractive to an employer that has a poorer claims history, has had more claims in the past and has charged higher rates, and so then they are put over onto the state small group.
Again, that absolutely probably could happen. Again, there's absolutely no evidence of that. And again, that's assuming that not only the insurance company, like Pacific Source, who has the largest book of small employer group health insurance out there, is just going to push it on to their own people. So there's no incentive for the insurance company to do it. There's no incentive for the association to do it, because they're just making their members upset by saying, you're not good enough to be in our association. It makes no good business sense from anybody's perspective. It's no good. I mean, it's not a good business sense. Now, if there is some ability to make the ratings a little bit more affordable, different than the way CHI is allowed, which only gives three rating factors, I think it's age, geography, and dependent status, okay? Rating could be a factor in there. Again, actuarially, the smaller you are, the less the rating factor has any credibility. And, the insurance companies know that. I mean, they don't want to lose a group just because they lost money on it that year. Next year, again, that person could be gone. It could have been a shock claim. It could have been a whole bunch of different things. I mean, I think having the flexibility, a little bit more flexibility than what CHI has, is it's not allowing the associations to provide additional
flexibility.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, you talk about there being no evidence because only 10% leave every year. Imagine a situation that the worst 10% of risks left every year.
Well, the ones that we manage, it's not usually the worst 10% of the risks that we're aware of.
The fact that there's only 10%, though, doesn't...
Again, it just goes back to, if Pacific Source is doing that, they're doing it to their own business.
Mr. Chairman, if I might offer...
It's not Pacific Source that's doing it, it's the association that's doing it.
Their 10% would actually be 10% better than our overall book of business that leaves Pacific Source. So actually, their retention rate within the association is higher than a carrier's normal retention rate of all their business.
Mr. Chair, I might like...
Are you done, Representative Cannon?
I am. Thank you.
If I might just interject, we, at the Agribusiness Council, we had a 98% retention rate in this last year, and of those, most of the ones we lost were actually because they went into Medicare. It wasn't because we were trying to get rid of or any of those. We've never even had those type of conversations before. The fact that you looked at our loss ratio, surprised we even have. because we care about our members. Our members come first, and providing that is more important than trying to kick someone out because they may have had a cancer or something.
And by caring about your members, you want to make sure that you can tell
all of our members
the higher risk is more money than the lower risk?
Is that no, what I'm saying is we want to be able to have the flexibility to look at whether it's Pacific Source or HealthNet or Blue Cross. We want to be able to get the best rates for our members, and through an association rate, that is the most important thing. Yeah. Whether that's through the big group or be able to provide. I'm not an expert in health insurance. I'm not claiming to be. I'm here to say that we're not trying to kick out our worst folks.
That's not the issue here. The issue isn't whether you can get Blue Cross and Kaiser and Pacific Source. The issue is whether within any of those mm-hmm. groups you can charge higher premiums for the worst risk than you charge for the best risk in the small group component. And that's the only thing that
there's actually more rating about. Factors than just the experience rating factors that CHI doesn't allow for, and I believe that's addressed in the actuary's comments. There are other ways to rate a group other than just by their age, their geography, and their dependent status. There are other factors. So it would allow the associations to rate other factors other than just by risk.
Are there any other questions?
I have one quick question. You can have as many as you want. I just want to get clear on, it's separate from what you've said, but I see the term multiple employer welfare arrangement, MEWAs. Are the associations
MEWAs
part of MEWAs?
typically, there's kind of two designations there. The MEWAs, kind of federal designation for a group of employers set up with a trust. Then there's the multi employer associations, which is basically what we're talking about here. In the one case on the MEWAs, are primarily regulated by federal regulations as self-insured trusts. Associations typically would be regulated because you're issuing a fully insured insurance policy that's regulated by the Oregon Insurance Division.
Okay, so an association that's providing these kinds of plans is a fully insured MEWA?
You could refer to that, and some might be and some might not be.
Yeah. We're learning a lot from
it. Yeah, a lot of different terms out there.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was going to deal with that.
While Ellen Pinney's coming up, could I ask you, Mr. Ariel, if you could give us a copy, not today, but a copy of that bulletin? And could you also maybe, if the question is just uncertainty, maybe you could prepare an amendment to this bill that would make sure you do have the authority to do what you're saying, and the next time the bill comes, we can consider both an amendment that will make clear you have the authority to do it and the amendment that will take away your authority.
Yeah,
what's the difference between a bulletin and a rule? Would you step up here? We have a question about that. The bulletin process is different than the rulemaking process, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, a bulletin is a clarification of what we believe the law to be. A rule is, in essence, making new law because the statute is not clear enough on its face to give you direction. So a rule actually does potentially create new law. It has to be consistent with the statute, but a bulletin is simply an interpretation or clarification. It has no direct legal force in and of itself. It just represents an attempt by us to communicate and say, here's what we think the law is, but if it went to court, wouldn't have any particular legal strength.
Okay.
Paul's there to ask a couple questions.
You got them.
Looking at someone gave us a 1991 letter from DOJ, and it says any fully insured MIWA is exempt from Oregon small employer health insurance requirements. And one of the last members of the panel indicated that there may be litigation to resolve whether or not your agency has the authority to regulate in the first place. Can you help us understand what, you know, does DOJ, are they firmly behind you and your agency and what
these
you're
are, these aren't new ones.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlake, I was hoping to avoid this, and I'll just be very brief here. There's three different types of entities at stake here. One is in-state associations. That's what the bulletin aims at. The second is MIWAs, which are creatures, as was Mr. Gravett's point, of federal law. And I will just cite you language from the last conference report, the last time the federal government dealt with MIWAs in a bill. The Senate conference report stated the goal of this bill was to, quote, preserve the current ambiguity in federal law as pertains to MIWAs. That's literally the language of the conference report. Lawyers have spent careers trying to guess what MIWA law might be. So it is very complicated. And the questions about regulatory authority there are more complicated than the ones that we were talking about today about state associations. But you have to go to the federal government to get authority as a MIWA, and only AOI has done that. The rest of these associations are not MIWAs today in the technical sense. The third issue is out-of-state associations that come into play here, too, and we're wrestling with that as well. So this problem is by no means a simple one. And so I think the chair's request that we create an amendment that would clarify the law as much as we can, given the ambiguity in federal law about MIWAs, we can for associations. We will endeavor to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, excuse me, my name is Ellen Pinney, and I work with the Oregon Health Action Campaign. I am delighted that in Oregon, unlike other states, association health plans are in fact required to comply with Oregon insurance mandates and patient protection laws. They should also be required to continue to comply with the rate limitations that make insurance rating practices in Oregon equitable for small businesses and their employees. Those laws prohibit rate discrimination on the basis of gender, health status, and employment type. Frankly, those laws would do better if they also prohibited rate discrimination on the basis of age. Currently in the CHI market, employers with elder employees can be charged 2.5 times the cost for their health insurance product as an employer with younger employees. OHAC supports and has always supported peer community rating in the insurance market, which is why we oppose this bill. It is a step in the wrong direction. 2835 will allow association health plans to cherry-pick small employers, and in so doing will destabilize the market in two ways, we believe. As employers with a disproportional number of healthy young men choose an AHP plan over a CHI plan, costs of plans in the CHI market should be expected to increase, and the risks CHI plans assume should also be expected to increase. As enrollment in association health plans comes to cover a population that might be expected as it ages to also experience increasing numbers of health conditions, association health plans may be expected to respond to increasing risk by increasing rates and throwing small employers back into CHI. But if you pass this bill, and I were an insurance agent, I would know exactly what kinds of businesses I could go to make some additional revenue. First of all, I would have to go to businesses that already have insurance. I think I was on the insurance pool governing board when we were offering to try to entice businesses that were not offering health insurance products. We were trying to offer a plan that was very low cost. It did not have to comply with state mandates. I think the lowest cost plan, we had to offer a plan for $53. Businesses that chose that plan got a $25 tax credit, and still we had very few takers. And the takers we did have, interestingly enough, were mom-and-pop type businesses, very small businesses. Currently in Oregon, we have two additional types of plans that are intended to entice employers that do not offer health care to the table by offering lower costs. What we call a mandate light plan and a kids only package. I think it would be very informative to hear how those plans have been accepted and purchased by employers who have not bought health insurance. So if I were a if I were an agent, I would go directly to employers that currently have health insurance, and I would select out those employers that have younger, healthier men first, and perhaps employers that have are offering jobs in employment fields that were not traditionally back in the day redlined by the industry. I encourage association health plans to offer all the myriads of benefits that you have heard that they do offer. Administrative simplicity, chronic disease benefits, and other kinds of extra benefits. I hope they continue to offer those benefits to their members. But I also ask you to oppose this bill. And I thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Thank you very much. Can we have Mark Hall, Bill Perry, and Gareth Rouse, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Hall. I'm the managing partner of a third-party administration firm called Get Benefits. I'm also serve on the board of the Associated Technology Council, which has approximately 7,000 insured members today across about 375 companies. I'm not sure whether I'm equipped legally to define whether the bill is defective or not, but again, I'd like to give you a little background on the way our members see what the Associated Technology Council does for them. Most of our companies are come out or were at one time in the CI market, obviously. The average size is anywhere from 15 to 18 employees. And I want to talk a little bit about the thing the last last mention, but we brushed over it a little bit, this idea of age rating. I'm very sensitive to age. I'm 58 now, and I'm not going in the right direction. If my company averages 58 years old, irrespective, and I'm in the 2 to 25 market, or now in the 2 to 50 market, if I don't have any claims at all, and I work real hard at having my employees take care of themselves, if my average age is 58, I'm going to get a larger increase in premium on my renewal, or I'm going to get a bigger premium or larger premium when I first enroll than a company of lesser age, period. Okay. Now, and that's just a fact of life. That's the way CHI is done. So when we talk about cherry picking, we're kind of cherry picking two directions here. We're cherry picking either on the healthy side, or we could conceivably be cherry picking on the age side.
Age rating factor in the association plan?
There is, you know, a partial age rating factor. And what we've talked about is we're concerned as an organization about the rising cost of health care, and that in particular premiums. Our premiums over the last 5 years have been increases in the area of 6 or 7% on average. I think the industry is running along about 12 to 13 or 14, depending upon which carrier you talk to. We're concerned about it. We do want to emphasize wellness. Employers really, you know, talking to their employees about taking care of themselves. And if there's no incentive at all for an employer to talk about it and make it important for their employees, if all we're going to do is rate on age, then it isn't going to matter. I can't create incentive. I can't create credit or debit. So our insurance carriers, the two medical carriers, being Providence Good Health Systems and HealthNet of Oregon, they look at a combined approach for us. They give some credibility for age, and they give some credibility for experience. A smaller group, that small group may have five employees, and they may have what somebody referred to as a shock claim. A shock claim in our industry is one that's a broken leg or something that got fixed and isn't necessarily coming back. So they actually look at those things. But no group is precluded from coverage, is declined for coverage. They may get a larger increase, but in general, those increases have been fairly modest, even for those companies that have relatively high claims. Last year we lost 3% of our block of business, and most of that was due to companies going out of business or being purchased by another corporation, not due to rises in health care costs.
Chair Grammick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I just want to add, first of all, I think there's been a lot of discuss on whether or not this bulletin is legal, illegal, whatever. I do think that it was brought up earlier that, you know, the question is that when the bulletin gets issued, do we, you know, if we disagree with it, do we have a chance to go to court or come here and ask you guys for clarification? I do think it's two options. Second of all, this bulletin was originally issued in August. It was supposed to go into place immediately, and there were negotiations with people at a higher pay grade than I was, and initially it was moved implementation out to July specifically for this purpose so we can have this discussion. And so I think that's the issue, is I think there's question from top to bottom of whether or not this is a proper adjustment in the law. And like I said, I'm not disputing anybody's, you know, everybody's got their own opinions, and that will continue. So I think the bulletin was moved from August to July for this particular reason, just to see if we can get some clarification from the legislative process. And I kind of agree with the previous speaker from the standpoint of, in essence, we keep talking about cherry picking, but everybody's got 20% increases in health insurance on average over the last few years. And the problem is that cherry picking or no cherry picking, everybody's struggling with trying to survive to be able to continue to offer the service. Whether it's 25, 19, I think when you see increases like that, it's a struggle. And so the question is that can we use underwriting techniques to try to ease that increase so the people that are on the borderline of be able to afford it right now can't afford it? And, you know, that's something from as we go out and negotiate for our members, are they better off with us doing that as a group and trying to find different mechanisms to keep the increase down? I think they're obviously asking us, we need to do that because we need to try to find a way to keep the expenses down for some of our smaller employees that are trying to hold on to the experience.
Well, can I ask you a question at this point? Okay, they hand you a 20% increase.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want to keep it down.
So you say, all right, half of the groups will have a 30% increase and the other half will have a 10% increase. I mean, which is what you're talking about doing here. How does that keep it down?
I guess I would say I'm not necessarily an actuary, but I guess the way I view the world, and trust me, I didn't even go to the classes I was planning to attend in Oregon State, much less some of the other ones. But
incidentally, you know what an actuary is.
Yeah.
A person that didn't have the personality to be an accountant.
I mean, what you're doing is risk assessment. And I think one of the points was brought up was, okay, is age an appropriate risk assessment? And from my understanding is there are three of them that are already there. And so then the question is do I have additional risk assessments? So I don't necessarily think that just because everybody's premium goes up 20%, that means I'm going to spread the 20%. It's just, do I have an ability to look at several different factors? And do I have an ability to look at six instead of three? And yeah, maybe somebody in my plan goes up 22% instead of 20. Do they have the option to go onto the open market and get 20? You know what I mean? So I don't necessarily think all health plans are going to be the same. And I'm not saying it's anything like workers' comp or anything else, but I think most people, when you talk to people about workers' comp, they just said, well, the Restaurant Association's plan beats everybody's. And I don't think necessarily it's just because I've got all the great people at a risk. I think we do a lot more as an association to benefit getting back to work and different things. So I think there's things you can do as association to try to keep your costs down. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know what they are, but I'd much rather have six perspectives to look at keeping costs down instead of three. I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but it just seems like the more you have to basically assess risk, because really what you want to do is cut costs. I mean, in essence, you just...
Yeah, but your fee is the average risk of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... And all that the insurance administrator is trying to stop is how you divide that average risk
mm-hmm.
among your small groups.
And I would say almost every program I have has some sort of risk assessment in it. And, I mean, my workers' comp, my credit card processing, I just, as you look at these, we're internally dealing with that. And I will say that there are members that aren't necessarily happy if they get a larger increase than some of my other members. But when you sit there and go, it's based on risk, it's really kind of hard for them to refute that. You just have to have an ability, from my perspective, to say that people that are doing certain practices potentially and trying to prevent costs, is there a way to benefit them? And I would argue that I think even internally in our membership, we should have that capabilities. I remember where I was at and my path line, but I guess I'll let that go. But I do think that when you look at the losses that we've had based in our program are not necessarily just based on risk. It's the fact that costs are going up. And I think we need to do something to try to decrease costs, to try to make sure the assessments aren't going. And I would also say we have a problem in our association as costs go up, our individual employees, which are the younger employees you want in the system, as it goes up, they can't afford to. So, once again, you're trying to keep those costs down so you can get the younger people interested because they have the, I'm invincible mentality that we all had when we were 25. And then we're stuck with people that are our age stuck in the program that are more susceptible to some of the costs. But I will let Garth go next.
Okay. Thanks. Mr. Chairman, my name is Garth Rouse, and I'm with Garth Rouse & Associates. We're health insurance. We provide with small employers at the CHI. And also do work with the Oregon Restaurant Association. And I guess I'll come right to it. I think you've all talked about it a little bit. And the issue here is, as you put it, does a 30%, if you've got an overall 20, is it fair for some people to get 30 and others to get 10, right? I mean, that really is kind of where we are. And I would say, personally, if I didn't believe that people could do something to control their costs, I'd say, throw us all in a big pool and we'll just all suffer through it. My understanding from information that I've read is that upwards 70-75% of the costs that are incurred to date are modifiable through lifestyle behavior. 70-75% are modifiable through lifestyle behavior. What's going to make us want to change, to modify ourselves? I can tell you, I have a brother-in-law who chooses to take a pill. He's heavy, he's got, cholesterol issues and those type of things. Rather than working out and addressing things with diet and exercise, he chooses to take a pill for that. That's his choice, and that's the choice we have today. I think the problem that
it's
we have...
It's far more effective.
It may or may not be.
With that, it's more effective. But that's a different point.
It is a different point. I would argue that I think there ought to be, for any group, there ought to be a component in there of looking at past claims experience, because there has to be something, again, to make us want to change. Mark talked about it at the start. I think we're doing things differently in our office today because we've seen our costs continue to go up, and incentive programs for people to be healthy and folks to walk around the block and do another different kinds of things, little things. But I believe that most of the costs that we have today are modifiable through lifestyle behaviors and lifestyle changes. But, again, what's going to get us to do that? Until we get to the place, I think it has to be financial. It has to be monetary. I think there has to be some incentive for us to keep those costs down.
So if you had the data that changing behavior today affected health care costs 25 years from now, you still think it's inappropriate to look at last year's utilization in order to get people to change behaviors that are going to have an effect 25 years later?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that if people understood that their claims experience directly applied to had a direct correlation with their health insurance costs, I think there would be incentive for people to look at making those changes.
Yeah,
I think
if it did, but my hypothesis, my hypothetical is this, because, for example, if you quit smoking at 25,
mm-hmm.
you won't get lung cancer at 50.
Mm-hmm.
If you quit smoking at 25, you won't have a heart attack at 48.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if I get you to quit smoking, you're suggesting that it's fair to look at last year's utilization to get the rates, even though the behavior has an effect 25 years downstream.
I understand what you're saying, and I guess the comment that I would make, Mr. Area had talked about having a two-person group and you have a heart attack and those kind of things, or whatever, you have a broken leg or surgery or whatever, and affecting the rates immediately. I believe that they have better capabilities of looking at your health today and the practices you do and how that's going to affect you not just in the short term but long term. I was yesterday at the Salem Hospital, second trip in a week's time, first with a daughter with a bladder infection and son with an accident on a motorcycle and had to have 12 stitches. So are you going to see that in, you know, lifestyle behavior? You might not. But again, until we get, I believe that we're getting to the place where people are understanding the different factors that go into long-term health. And again, if you believe that we all should be in one big pool, and then fine, then throw us all in one big pool. But if you believe that there are things that we can take a look at, practices and how people treat themselves and what they eat and those kind of things to keep long-term health under control, then I think you ought to incentivize folks that way.
But those aren't the practices that you're talking about doing here. The practice you're talking about doing here is last year's utilization, not 25 years from now. Probably. No, I might have no problem if you get people, say, to quit skiing. Guys used to ski. Now I say to you, if you quit skiing, I know on the average you're going to have these orthopedic injuries. Mm-hmm. If you quit skiing, I'll give you 2% off in your premium. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about last year's heart attack, not one 25 years from now.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could clarify a little bit. The way our plans are underwritten for renewal is if we look back last year, of course, but we look back over the trend of as many years as we have. Part of the rating is done that way as well. So just want to clarify that we don't look back the last 12 months and not the last 24 or 36 that we have if our underwriters have information available to them. So you begin to see a trend, not the 25-year trend.
We're going to be thrown out of here shortly. Are you done? I interrupted you. A brief question? So, this has been very, very interesting. I really appreciate all of you who testified on this. We're getting educated on this. This has been a very interesting discussion. I thank you all. We'll think about where we're going from here. We've got written testimony from a bunch of people.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I think it's just the second one. Lisa Tressel, I believe, referenced from the Stratton Company in her testimony, and then McGarton's Analytical Services. So those two pieces were just post her testimony, but that piece.
Okay. So we have received testimony from the Oregon Association of Plumbing, Heating and Cooling Contractors, and you think everything else has been put into the record?
She has confirmed that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, great. I'll close the public hearing on HB, what number? 2835. And just for our subcommittee members, if you're interested, there'll be a hearing on Senate Bill 27 today. At the committee we usually adjourn to. Is it still on our record?
It is.
Not on our record. That's Governor Kitzhaber's proposal, so it might be interesting to attend that at 5 o'clock in Hearing Room 50. And then I adjourn the Subcommittee on Healthcare Access of the House Committee on Healthcare.